You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Home Field Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another emotionally drained episode of the Assembly Call, as tonight your Indiana Hoosiers fall in Iowa City to the Hawkeyes 91-89 in a game that Indiana led at one point by 21 points in the first half, as we've been asking for these Hoosiers to start better, and they certainly did tonight. But that fast start was stopped in its tracks by Race Thompson getting rolled up on by an Iowa player for what certainly looked like a horrible injury. Both the action itself, Race's reaction afterwards, and, you know, Indiana just wasn't the same after that. Iowa, Hoosier still led by 10 at halftime, but Iowa was able to come back and get the victory, which drops Indiana to 10-4, 1-2 in conference play. So many angles to break down, and we are going to do it for you on this edition of the Assembly Call IU postgame show. I'm Jared Morris. I'm here with Ryan Phillips and Andy Bottoms. And guys, let's start this show the way that we start every show, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment. And I'm going to the end of the game for the banner moment. It was 87-85 Iowa. I think it was Peyton Sanford missed a shot, and Trace Jackson Davis proceeded to slam his body into an Iowa player with one of the best blockouts I've seen all season to try and secure the rebound. Bad back and all. He didn't end up getting the rebound, but his box out did allow Miller Kopp to get the rebound, which secured a huge possession for Indiana. Trace ended up getting the ball on the other end, getting fouled. He made one free throw. He was unable to make the other one, and so Indiana led 87-86 at that moment. But to me, that play just signified the incredible toughness and leadership that Trace Jackson Davis showed tonight. You know, he's obviously playing hurt. We all hoped that the time off would allow him to heal up. But if you saw the video, I don't remember who posted, Keegan Nickerson. I'm going to get your name wrong. I apologize. I'll find out who it was. Posted a video of Trace at halftime looking like he could barely walk. And yet Trace Jackson Davis led Indiana in minutes with 38. He scored 30 points. He had 9 boards. And he was even 8-for-10 from the line. And so I know those two that he missed late kind of stick out, but he even had a good night from the free throw line. This was one of Trace Jackson Davis's best performances on the road with his running mate, Race Thompson, out. He did everything he could for this Indiana team to get an important road win. And unfortunately, it just wasn't enough for Indiana on this night. But 30 points, 9 boards for Trace Jackson Davis. And, you know, just putting his body on the line in a game where Indiana would have had absolutely no chance without him. You know, obviously with some of the play that we got from the backup bigs, he had to stay out there. He did. And he left it out there. And just a terrific performance from him that ultimately comes in a loss. But I tip my cap to Trace for showing a ton of toughness and a ton of leadership tonight for his team. All right. Now it is time to discuss our presenting sponsor. Our banner moment tonight, as always, brought to you by our friends at Home Field Apparel, now in their 6th season of sponsoring the Assembly Call, and their 2nd as the presenting sponsor for the Back Home Network. As you know, Home Field has the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you will find anywhere, and ladies and gentlemen, it is growing. I got a sneak peek of a new batch of IU designs that are coming out. Have one being sent to me right now. I think some of the other Assembly Call folks do as well. And they look awesome. So I don't know exactly when those are dropping, but they are dropping soon. And so you will have some fun new IU home field apparel to order and get you ready for the second half of the season. But, you know, that's home field's thing. They pull these old vintage logos out. They breathe new life into them. They put them on the most comfortable materials. It's washable. The colors stay. And they're just a great Indiana business that employs folks in Indianapolis that came up through Kelly. Just everything about Home Field Apparel is worth supporting. And that's why we're proud that they support us and why we love supporting them. So go to homefieldapparel.com and use our promo code HOME to get 15% off your first order. That is promo code HOME, H-O-M-E, for 15% off. Once again, the website homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. Okay, well, it is time to move the ball, find the open man, and get some opening thoughts from the rest of our team. Andy, we will start with you, your bottom line on this just really emotionally draining Indiana loss to Iowa tonight.
Yeah, this game felt like it lasted forever. Maybe that's because it's 11:40 right now in the Eastern time zone here. But, man, just so much happened. So much excitement at the beginning of the game. Although, you know, I texted you guys, at no point, even up to 21, did I feel comfortable. Was certainly excited to see how they came out to play. But, you know, Iowa was really backed into a corner coming into the game with how they had played. Some of Fran's antics, I think, got him a little bit fired up. And IU relaxed for a stretch defensively and allowed Iowa to get some confidence. And just over the remainder of the first half, when they got in it, gave up a ton of easy baskets, whether they were inside or wide open threes, gave up multiple second chances. And that really carried over to the second half when, by my charting, Iowa scored 1.42 points per possession for the half. And scored on, I think, 9 of the last 11 possessions. Now, a lot of those are from the free throw line, which probably have some discussion about later, but just just heartbreaking in every way, shape, or form for IU, from the race injury, which is kind of first and foremost of that. But just with how they started, then falling behind, and then that push at the end to get back the lead back up. And then it was almost like they relaxed again. I think a lot of it was just running out of gas, quite honestly. Didn't sub very much in the second half because they really weren't getting a whole lot out of guys not named Trace Jackson Davis and not named Jalen Hood-Schifino. A few contributions here and there from other guys, but it was really on those guys to shoulder the load, and they did everything they could to do it. But just, you know, Race had been that guy early in the game with a few timely baskets and scored 9 points in the time that he was in there. And just without him, they just didn't have a consistent third option, put so much on TJD and Jalen, and just really couldn't get over the hump. I thought missed some chances to really attack against the Iowa pressure. Once they would break the press, it was like, particularly they were stretched in the second half where they would pull the ball back out when they were really struggling to get anything, get good looks in the half court, as opposed to, you know, really trying to push the action. You got the advantage, you've gotten by the initial traps, and maybe that was trying to manage the tempo of the game a little bit. I don't really know, but I thought for a team that was really struggling to get good looks, there might have been some easy basket opportunities there had they been a bit more aggressive in some of those situations.
Yeah, well said, Andy. All right, Ryan, I know there's a lot to rant about, so.
Well, the first thing I want to say is that 10 minutes that Race Thompson played early in the game was the best he's looked all season. That was the best of Race, and you know, it's happened before.
Looked all season.
Well, but I mean, him specifically, he had that bounce and that energy back, and I mean, God, it happens. Guys look great, and all of a sudden, it's gone. And so, thoughts are with him because it did look serious, and he looked like he knew it was serious. Earlier in the week, as we all saw on Twitter, somebody called Trace Jackson Davis soft. That label needs to be thrown in the garbage, because with a bad back, Trace Jackson Davis was everything you could possibly want him to be tonight. He and Jalen Hood-Schifino were out of this world, incredible, exactly what you expect from them. And so kudos to them. What I'll say here is the entire roster played hard. They gave the right effort. I think the coaching did not put them in the right position to win. I thought for 20 minutes in the middle of this game, Mike Woodson looked like a deer in headlights as Iowa tore Indiana apart to come back. And there were no adjustments and there were no changes. And I think Mike Woodson is very set in his ways. And when he makes a decision, he continues to do that. Coming out of halftime, you needed somebody to guard Chris Murray because Race Thompson was out. He put Jordan Geronimo on Chris Murray. Everybody who watches Indiana basketball knew that was a bad matchup. Jordan Geronimo scored 9 points tonight, more than he normally does. He was minus 18 because Chris Murray beat him like a drum repeatedly. After the first three possessions that Chris Murray scored, he should have been taken off of Chris Murray. Put anyone else on him, I don't care. Miller Kopp guarded him better than Geronimo did. Trace Jackson Davis guarded him better. Trey Galloway was on him for a little bit. Was better. Anybody. He left him on Chris Murray for another 7 minutes. And he got their best player hot when he hadn't been great in the first half. And then who closed it for Iowa down the stretch? Chris Murray did. It's obvious that needed a change. Iowa throws a weak zone at Indiana, and Indiana looked like it had never seen a zone before. And Indiana's had good zone offense earlier in the year at times. Where were the adjustments? You finally saw them with about 5 minutes left. They started getting traced the ball in different areas. But why did it take 15, 20 minutes for those adjustments to come? This was a 21-point lead against a team that had lost three in a row, lost to Penn State and Nebraska, and was at their low point of the season. And you let them back in the game. You did nothing to counter it, and then you lost. That's a bad loss. I don't care that it's on the road. I don't care that Iowa's a tough place to play. I don't care that Indiana doesn't usually win there. You were up 21 points, just like when they were up big at Wisconsin and blew it. I think it was last year. Just like that. If you're up 21 on the road, I don't care if your guys get injured. I don't care. You should be able to win that game. And the fact that they couldn't find a way to win this game with Trace Jackson Davis playing out of his mind, with Jalen Huccifino having one of the best games of his career, you can't find a way to win that game. I don't blame the players. I don't. And there weren't enough adjustments, and the coaching staff did not put them in a position to win. I don't care. You can't say, well, players didn't hit shots. They were 8 of 15 from 3. You can't say that, you know, well, this happened, this happened, this happened. All the numbers across the board are numbers that you would like to see when Indiana wins, other than defensively, where they had no idea how to guard Iowa and made no adjustments to guard them. So I don't blame the players. I think the players played their butts off, and they deserve much better than what they got tonight.
I'm with you on that, man. I mean, this is a team that, you know, is down at starting point guard with X. You lose Race Thompson, who's really been kind of the heart and soul of the program for 3 or 4 years. I mean, that's hard. It's hard to go on the road and win a Big Ten game without those two guys. And Indiana should have won this game because you got a superhuman effort from Trace Jackson Davis. Jalen Huccifino was everything that you would want a freshman point guard to be
on the road
in his first Big Ten road game. Because remember, he didn't play against Rutgers. And in a 2-point game, you know, Andy, to the point Ryan's making, I mean, there in the second half, I mean, it was just a clinic. It was Chris Murray on a cut. It was Chris Murray on a drive. It was Chris Murray being left ridiculously wide open on a three. I mean, you've got to change something there. And obviously, this defense is not the same as last year's. You know, this team just isn't going to win with its defense right now. Again, you're down two of your three best defensive players without X and Race in there. I get that. But there had to be something else done at certain points when it just kind of felt like things were unraveling and it took too long to get it back. And to the players' credit, they kept doing it. You know, they got down by 4-6 and they go on that run to be up by 4-6, whatever it was, going into the under four minute timeout. It was great. It was Trace Jackson Davis making plays. Yeah, Trace is making plays. Jalen's making plays. Miller's cutting. Tamar's cutting. Tamar's getting deflections and throwing outlet passes. I mean, it was just a beautiful 3 or 4 minutes of players making plays in a big game. And then we come out for the final 4 minutes and
it was like they ran out of gas.
I mean, it was a little bit that they ran out of gas.
No field goals for IU the last 3 minutes and 42 seconds.
Yeah.
And no adjustments. It felt like the adjustments they made before that, they went back to what they were doing before.
Right. And that's the frustration.
Yeah.
That's the frustration.
And defensively, no adjustments defensively. I mean, the whole game. I mean, you might have switched who was on who on substitutions or whatever, but the biggest glaring thing for me, I'm sorry, is just leaving Geronimo on an island. That's not good for him. Like, it's not his fault. You know what I mean? He's doing what he does. We know what Jordan Geronimo is as a junior. He is not an on-ball defender, and when he's off the ball, he often loses his guy. When you lose the best player on the other team and leave him wide open for repeated threes, or leave him wide open under the basket, or he backdoor cuts you because you're watching the ball and not both the ball and your man, like, it happened repeatedly, and there's no adjustment. No, like, hey, you know what? We got to change it up. I made a bad call. He just left it there and let it go and let it go. And by the time you look up, Iowa has destroyed a 21-point lead and made it even. And the rest of the game was pretty much even. And you put yourself in a bad position just by sticking to what's not working. If it's not working, there's a reason it's not working. Change it up. Even if you change it up for two possessions. You know, when Iowa went into the zone at the beginning, it was just for one possession to slow IU down, and then they went back to man-to-man. And then they realized, oh, wait, they're killing us in man-to-man. Fran McCaffrey made the call to start the game in man-to-man. He adjusted. I mean, I hate saying this, but Fran McCaffrey coached circles around Mike Woodson tonight after that bad start. And, you know, we know what we think of Fran as a coach and you know, quite frankly, as a person. But it's, you know.
Yeah, we don't need to say anything bad about Fran as a person. They've had,
well,
they've
I mean,
had
like the way he acts
family.
On the court. I don't mean the human being. I mean, yes, the way he acts, he handles himself.
Okay.
No, I just think it's like, you know, I just don't know how you don't make adjustments at that point. Archie Miller did the same damn thing for 4 years and it got him fired. And yeah, so I think, and again, not comparing the two, but I'm saying like that was one of the biggest complaints with him is that he never adjusted what he was doing to his players. And you lose Race Thompson, you got to have a backup plan for losing everybody, except for Trace Jackson Davis. You lose Trace Jackson Davis, there's nothing you're going to do to replace that guy. But you got to have a plan. You have guys on the bench you didn't even use. I mean, if it's not working, give somebody else a chance. You can't just keep beating the same drum and expecting different music to come out.
Yeah, I think I think it was after they tried to switch and put Kopp, even before they took Geronimo out. They tried to put Kopp on Murray, and I would just kept running screens because the way IU was switching just to get Geronimo right back on him. Which again is coaching and kind of understanding the matchups that you want to attempt to exploit. You know, the adjustment to go small when IU really had that little run there with Kopp at the four just seemed to come too late when you really weren't getting anything out of the bench big guys at all. And that really started in the first half. Geronimo did score some points, but he gave up so many on the other end, it just became difficult to justify that. So I thought a little bit late and, you know, kind of pulling the trigger on that. I guess the other Woodson point was what play you drew up and kind of the use of the timeouts there. It was odd to me that you basically had a free timeout with, I forget whether it was a review or maybe it was somebody fouling out or whatever. It was when they were reviewing the stuff with the coaches. Like, you could have drawn something up then with what they did. I thought what they did execute made a little bit of sense in that they seemed to be trying to get TJD to just seal off his guy to open up a lane for Huchefino. He went really early in that, and then you didn't have a timeout to use later because you just advanced the ball across half court, took a timeout before you ran that play. Like, you could have set that up there, had your timeout to either set something up defensively or do whatever, because the way that Iowa played after that in terms of the way they fouled and different things like that, you could have used that timeout at some point. Just I didn't hate the play call because it felt like it had to be something with Huchefino or Trace, and they were really struggling to get the ball inside to Trace. Although with Rebraca out, maybe you should have tried something different in that regard. You know, they kept trying to put Kopp on the same side as TJD, so they wouldn't help off of him, but they just didn't care. They helped off of him, they closed out, and Kopp was really reticent to shoot for whatever reason. That was, you know, maybe another adjustment at some point in the game that you could see what they were trying to do to put them on the same side. It just wasn't really doing anything. Because he didn't seem to want to shoot, and you know, lots of coaching points I think to be made over the course in this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gosh, let's talk a little bit about Jalen Huchefino, who, along with Trace Jackson Davis, was terrific tonight. 21 points, 9 assists. Really was just such a catalyst for Indiana. You know, to start out the game was so confident. Only had 2 turnovers. You know, he really kind of
second half.
Yeah. I mean, he really found another gear where he was able, you know, especially early on, where he was able to play fast without being rushed, you know, and without trying to make some of the home run passes. I mean, the passing, it feels like 2 months ago, but the first 10 minutes of the game, you know, was some of the best passing and player and ball movement that we've seen from this Indiana team. You know, and I even tweeted it out at the time, you know, it's one thing to be shot out of a cannon and, you know, play super hard for 10 or 15 minutes after a 2-week layoff. But what kind of game shape are these guys in, especially when you're relying on, you know, 2 guys who have been hurt and, you know, presumably rested a lot for these 2 weeks. You know, and as we talked about, you know, the team running out of gas a little bit there. But Huchefino just time and time again, tonight, stepped up with big shots. And his shooting, you know, has become a big weapon for Indiana. He was 5 of 8 from downtown tonight and really looked confident doing it. You know, and we didn't see a lot of the mid-range jumpers from him that have been relatively inefficient this season. You know, he was content to step out and take the threes. You know, and so, you know, if you're looking, you know, obviously for positives from tonight, his play, I mean, he's ready. Jalen Huchefino is ready to go win games on the road in the Big Ten as a point guard. Now, other things need to happen for those wins to actually come. But, you know, he played well tonight in a tough environment, in a tough situation. And that's, you know, really encouraging to see. You know, a healthy Jalen Huchefino means a ton for this team. Ryan?
Yeah.
Andy. Oh, go ahead, Andy.
Sorry, you didn't say, so I just jumped in. I figured I better jump in before I got
sorry.
Interrupted. So just wanted to take the opening while I was there. No, I really thought, you know, at the beginning of the game, And even through stretches of the second half, I mean, he was just controlling the entire game. If he wasn't scoring, he was setting guys up. You know, making those threes was huge. He hit a couple big ones in the second half to really keep things close when it felt like the game was getting away from him. And it really just, you know, I kind of go back to, you know, that the press from Iowa was, you know, clearly designed more to, I know IU turned the ball over against it a lot last year, but I thought this year it was more designed to kind of slow things down. But I did think there were opportunities that IU had once they really didn't turn the ball over against it very much at all. They had the 1 10-second call, maybe one other turnover against it. But I just thought there were times when he could have attacked a little bit more and try to create things. It was a nice drive that he had, finger roll that just went off. I thought he could have done even a little bit more of that, been even more aggressive in some of those situations. So just wasn't spacing enough at variety of points in the second half to really just try to pound the ball inside to TJD. And I thought, you know, didn't really put him in a lot of, you know, it's not that you can't run ball screens against the zone at all. Like, just didn't put him in the zone, kind of took those situations out. And those are situations that he makes the right read more often than not. So I thought in that way, Iowa was effective at limiting him to some extent in the second half, although he wasn't limited that much if you look at the overall stat numbers, but just a really, really solid game and what they're going to need from him with X out. But I thought did a lot of good things and really at times was the absolute, you know, kind of puppet master of what was going on the court and really was getting able to do whatever he wanted. And I think as you know, Iowa adjusted, IU struggled to find ways to continue to allow him to perform in that capacity.
Yeah, I think Jalen, you know, 7 assists in the first half. He wound up with 9. He only had 2 in the second half. I think that's kind of a microcosm of the zone. You know, Indiana struggles versus that. I mean, look, Indiana scored, you know, 1.08 points per possession in the second half, but they still kind of, you know, they were just out of sorts. I mean, they were getting baskets because Iowa's not a good defensive team, but they were, so it wasn't as smooth as it was in the first half. But the thing is, he only had those 2 assists in the second half, but he had no turnovers, as we said. And, you know, 10 points in the second half, 11 in the first. You know, he was 2 of 3 from 3. I mean, he was doing what he could. I think that, you know, one of the issues I had, and Miller Kopp was out there for, Miller Kopp had 6 rebounds in the first half. I thought that he did really well once Race was out of stepping up a little bit and doing some things. But you look at a guy like Miller Kopp, and against the zone, if you are doing the correct things, you should get open looks for guys. And Miller Kopp had 1 3-point shot tonight. And I don't blame Miller Kopp. I blame it because they didn't run anything for him. They didn't move anything around. They didn't do it. He was doing the same thing that they usually have him do, which is sort of stand on one side of the court. You know, they alternate. So Jalen, you know, there was one time he missed a wide open Miller in the corner, whatever. But Jalen was doing what he could to get the ball to guys. The problem is every time Miller and sometimes Tamar Bates caught the ball, they didn't have enough time to shoot. You know, the guys were closing out pretty fast. And so I thought that, you know, really Jalen did everything he could today. I just think that the whole situation in the system wasn't working in their favor in the second half. I think it worked in the first against man-to-man. I thought the zone, it just hampered what he could do. And that's why he only had those 2 assists in the second half.
Yep. Okay, let's take a break here. Time to move on to segment 2. As we continue here, our breakdown of Indiana's loss to Iowa, we'll point out tonight's meaningful moments you might have missed. Then we'll go inside the numbers to highlight the most important statistical notes from this game and some spicy Mike Woodson quotes coming out of the postgame. Stick with us.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
What's going on? It's Christian Wofford. What's the only thing better than an epic buzzer beater? Celebrating it with friends afterwards. Join my guys, Jared, Andy, Ryan, and Coach on the assembly call after every IU game. Go Hoosiers.
Thank you, Christian. You are listening to the Assembly Call IU postgame show. I'm Jared Morris. I'm here with Ryan Phillips and Andy Bottoms. We're breaking down Indiana's two-point loss, just crushing two-point loss to the Iowa Hawkeyes tonight. And it's the beginning of segment two, so you know what that means. Yes, it is time for tonight's Meaningful Moments You Might Have Missed, brought to you by our friends at Hoosier Ticket Project, where they help individuals and families experience IU athletic events in person for the first time through the generosity of alumni and fans. To learn more about how you can donate money or extra tickets to help create meaningful moments for other IU fans, visit HoosierTicketProject.org. That's HoosierTicketProject.org. You know, we can pick up on the conversation with Jalen Hood-Schifino because I just think there were so many moments tonight that showed how important he already is, to this team. You just think about, moments where Indiana needed someone to step up, and who was there but Jalen Hood-Schifino. You know, it happened in the first half. Indiana, takes that big 21-point lead. Iowa starts whittling it down. It's 30-15. Jalen had gone out for a little bit of a break. He comes in. We immediately go on a 5-0 run. He made a three in transition. He found Jordan Geronimo for a dunk, pushed the lead right back out. It happened in the second half. Indiana has lost its lead. Iowa takes a 64-61 lead, and that's the point where Indiana just nothing was happening offensively for Indiana, and it really felt like the game might get away. Jalen steps up and drains a three. It's 64-64. Iowa goes and scores four straight points, 68-64. Again, it kind of feels like they're going to push the lead out. Jalen hits another three, 68-67. And so I just think it's hard to overstate how impressive he was in his first Big Ten road game. For a freshman point guard to do that in your first Big Ten road game was just, just really, really impressive. And Ryan, to your point about Miller Kopp, there's two things I'll say about him. One, look, it's hard to question a shooter's decision to shoot or pump fake, because if you're a shooter and you feel like you have space, you're going to take it. All I will say is, from my vantage point watching on TV, it felt like there were three or four opportunities where Miller and Tamar had space to shoot it and they pump faked instead of shooting it, and we ended up not getting a good look after that. Now, I'm just going to say that's an observation, but it's not a criticism, because if they're not feeling comfortable shooting it, they shouldn't shoot it. Okay, so just take that as an observation. But on a night when Indiana goes 8-for-15 from the 3-point line, they needed to get up more threes. That's not enough 3-pointers, And so you've got to find a way, whether it's maybe taking a shot that's a little more contested that you want, or the offense creating better looks, or preferably both. This was a night where it really felt like Indiana needed to get more looks from three-point range, and they just didn't get them.
There was one late in the game where Tamar had one in the corner he should have taken, 100%. With Miller Kopp, I thought there were two he could have gotten off, and I thought the other ones, which I know exactly what you're talking about, where he pump-faked and kind of switched, he had Chris Murray closing out on him with long arms. I think that's what it was. And it's, I'm not comfortable shooting this over this guy closing out, being athletic in the air. It wasn't like he was standing there alone and passed it up, And so, I get that. At some point, maybe if things are going bad, you try and force one. But you'd rather have Kopp forcing it than, Galloway came down and shot a three in a tie game without getting a touch from Trace Jackson Davis on one. You're just like, I know you've hit some threes this year, Trey. That is not our shot. I don't care how open you are. As it was out of rhythm, too. It wasn't like he caught it perfectly in rhythm. He caught it and kind of paused and then shot. It's like, no. Yeah. Right there in that situation, you get the ball. You make sure Trace gets a touch. There's 20 seconds on the clock.
Yeah, and that's – well, and Andy, that was, another moment that I was going to mention. Indiana – I think we were up six at the under 4-minute timeout. Iowa quickly closed that, and it's 84-84. Our next two possessions are a Trey floater and then that Trey three. He's made both of them this year, but that's not what you want on successive possessions when going into Trace had been working, and Tamar and Miller cutting had been working. And we just, in those critical moments, we weren't able to do that against a team that's not really good defensively. You know, and it was interesting, Andy, you know, on our text thread, you know, Coach sent a text, Coach Tonsoni sent a text at some point tonight. You know, it's the annual question of, is our offense fixed or are we just playing Iowa? You know, and
always, and that's an every year question.
It is. It is. Yeah. And, you know, so it is, it's difficult to extrapolate what you can really take from this game offensively. But there were certainly some of those possessions late during those final 4 minutes. You know, Iowa had the guys for the most part taking the shots that it wanted, and there were just too many possessions where Indiana didn't, you know. And in a 2-point game on the road, that's the difference between winning and losing.
Yeah, I just thought IU was just running straight post-ups. They weren't really doing anything to try to get, you know, to free up Trace, because they were shoving him down the line. Even one of the, you know, fouls that got called, I think it was Murray kind of coming over the top. I mean, it was a really difficult angle to throw the pass over the top to TJD, who made a great catch, you know, ends up getting fouled there. But there just were not great angles to do that. They just were not – they were relying on him to create enough space on his own, and they weren't really doing anything within the scheme of the offense to actually get him freed up to get him the ball. And so you ended up with those possessions, as you – you know, as you mentioned, where you just get late in the shot clock and it's somebody trying to make something happen. But there just really wasn't any real plan, it didn't feel like, other than, boy, I hope this guy gets open, then we're going to dump the ball into him. And, you know, maybe a little bit of that's on him for, you know, trying to, you know, find enough space. But I was really sagging off of everybody, daring somebody to make a shot at those points. And, just seemed like it was another opportunity to run something different offensively to get him the ball. I think everybody is fine with playing through him, but they just, for possessions on end during that stretch, couldn't get it to him. And if they did, he was having to, you know, go so far out of range of the basket to actually catch the ball. It really wasn't in an advantageous place to get it to him in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. One thing you can do against the zone, and what happens a lot is people think that, well, it's a zone, so you can't screen because there's no minimum. You could screen plenty against the zone. You just have to know the spots to hit. And what they should have done with Trace when it was stagnant is moved him up, set a ball screen, you know, for Jalen Hood-Schifino, make Iowa's defense close from that other side, and then you slip Miller Kopp to the corner, and that's when his guy has to step up to assist on that screen. You get the open looks in the corner. It's a very easy basketball play, and they did not run it once tonight. They did dribble handoffs and they did stuff to move guys around, but they never sent Trace up to set a screen on the ball handler in the middle of the floor, which is a classic thing you do against a zone just to get the defense moving. Because here's the thing, when you pass the ball around the perimeter against a zone, that's exactly what they want you to do, because they don't have to move. They don't have to move. And it's like you can shift side to side and cut guys through and stuff like that. And there is usefulness to reversing it, but you're not making the defense work when you do that. You go up, have your best player set a screen on someone, roll to the free throw line where he's dangerous once he gets the ball, even with a bad back. He showed that tonight. He's at least going to get fouled if he goes there most of the time. And then also what it does is it opens up the corners. And what happens is, set that screen, he rolls to the free throw line, the bottom guy steps up. If the side guy steps up, if the bottom guy then goes and takes the guy in the corner, it's a wide open lane to the basket, or he closes and you have the guy open in the corner. It's simple basketball stuff that Indiana just doesn't do. And I don't know why. You know, maybe they're trying to be too complicated or something and run something that's so above everybody else that it's not, you know, I don't know what it is. I don't know, because this is stuff I ran in middle school. Like, and you run it all throughout high school. It's impossible to guard because you don't have enough people to guard that many players. It's an easy equation. It's 3 versus 2, and they have to decide, and you're going to get an open look somewhere. You know, the only question is making the open look. Well, you have Miller Kopp alone in the corner or Trace Jackson Davis at the free throw line, and that's your choice. I'll take both of those, either one. So I just don't understand. You're right, Andy. Against the zone, they were just running straight post up. And then at the end of the game, they gave it to Trace a little bit at the free throw line. There were and you got some success out of that. But the place to beat a zone, 3-2, 2-3 matchup, whatever, is the free throw line, is the elbow, is that area. And Indiana didn't run anything to it pretty much all game. I saw Miller Kopp. It wasn't part of the offense, but I saw him take it on his own to run to that spot a few times.
Yes, he did.
When things got stagnant. Miller Kopp was standing in the corner. No one would give him the ball, and he ran to the free throw line a couple times. And it did tighten the spacing up a little bit, but it also confused the hell out of Iowa because they weren't seeing it all game. And so kudos to Miller Kopp for being like, hey, we're not getting anything. I'm going here. And that was not the offense they were running. He just spotted an opening and went. And I mean, the fact that he knows that and we're not running it is, it's kind of depressing, honestly.
I'll say, man. Go ahead, Andy.
He
would flash there a few times. And I think that's, I remember talking about that against in the Syracuse game last year, where it was like, you know, I think he's doing very much like what he's drilled to do. So that's kind of ingrained in his head. But it seemed like they got away from that a little bit, particularly once they went to the smaller lineup, which Kopp's a guy who in that spot is somebody who can turn and face and make the shot from there and is at least kind of, you know, has a little bit of size that you can, you know, see over somebody. So, yeah, it did seem strange to me that that was not done intentionally. At least it didn't feel that way.
You're right, Andy. It was when they went to a smaller lineup. I mean, Geronimo, that's the only thing he could do was either stand on the baseline or flash up. And so he flashed up there occasionally. When they went to the smaller lineups or when they went, when they took Geronimo out, nobody was doing it. And it clearly wasn't what they were doing. They were doing dribble handoffs and spacing a different way and all that. And nobody flashing there at all. And it was wide open all night, wide open.
I will say on the point of Miller Kopp, he made a lot of winning plays tonight in a game that Indiana lost by two. They weren't the kind of plays that you normally expect from Miller Kopp. You know, he wasn't out there draining threes. He only took one, which again, Miller Kopp playing 31 minutes and only taking one 3-pointer. That can't be. That just cannot be. Again, he's got to maybe be a little bit more aggressive shooting and the offense has to get him some more shots. But his rebounding, and again, you know, you talk about the defense. I felt like we got to this point at the end of last season where it's just like, well, just put Miller or Parker Stewart on him because at least those guys like kind of compete and know where they're supposed to be defensively. And, you know, they try to recover, you know, if the guys who seem like they're the better athletic matches can't do it. And it kind of feels like we're that place again because at the end of the game, Miller Kopp was just kind of a pest defensively. He forced that tie up. He got loose balls. So, you know, look. The answer to Chris Murray is not Miller Kopp. I mean, you know, Chris Murray was going to someone. I don't remember who I said it to, you know, today. You know, they were talking about the key to the game is stopping Chris Murray. And I'm like, we're not stopping Chris Murray. He's going to get his 30 points. You just have to stop the other guys because we have no answer for him. You know, Race is kind of an answer, but without him, don't have an answer. Yeah.
At least with Race, you had size on him. So he wasn't going to get his shot off. And if he did drive in, you've got length and then Trace helping.
And you look, so that's, Jordan, that's the thing. Jordan Geronimo, another meaningful moment, you know, folks might have missed, had another one of his just incredible transition blocks. He is one of the best transition rim protectors in IU history. He's terrific at it.
Yep.
But in terms of half-court defense, he's a guy who tries really hard, but is not an instinctive defender. And so he's, you know, a half step slow with his movements because he's a half step slow with his recognition a lot of times. Just, you know, he's a guy who's still learning to play basketball. But to your point, Ryan, then you have to make an adjustment at some point. And even if Miller Kopp athletically isn't the guy, you saw it toward the end of the game where at least he can be a pest and be in a better position. And sometimes that's the guy that you need to have playing defense. Because again, if Chris Murray only scores 26 points, Indiana wins. You know?
No.
So, you know, some of those possessions that Indiana basically just gave up, you know, that ends up coming back to haunt you.
No, I'll say Jordan Geronimo's best role is to probably be defending the fifth best guy and be your weak side guy running over to make blocks and hustle plays and all of that and have a guy who's not a scorer, even if it's not their worst player, just like that's on the floor, but just a guy who's not a scorer. He can't guard a score. I mean, there was a point and they kept showing it on replay and I felt so bad for Jordan because of it was he was standing there defending Chris Murray and Chris Murray just spun off of him for a layup and Jordan was in the exact same position with his feet he was before the play as he was as Murray was laying it up. Like he didn't sense that that was going to happen. And he just went right by him and it was easy. And Jordan was just standing there like, you know, Murray had, disappeared. And so it's not, and again, it's not his fault. That's who he is. He's not an instinctive defender. As you said, I love him off the ball defensively. I love his hustle. I love the, you know, going up for rebounds and tips and all of that. He plays that role very well in transition. He's good, but he's not defend somebody else's number one guy. He just isn't. And you've got him, as you said, you've got to make an adjustment. You've got to help him out. It's setting him up to fail to do that. And you've got to help him out.
Yeah. Well, and that really ties back to, obviously it underscores the importance of losing Race Thompson and what a turning point that was. But also you go back and then try to figure out where you're going to get those minutes from. And it points you back to Malik Renew, who really struggled again tonight. You know, first two times he touched the ball, turned it over, committed fouls again. just really continues to seem out of sorts as he tries to, you know, get over that freshman wall or through the freshman wall, whatever you want to call it, that he seems to have hit at this point. And so, you know, that's where the move to play a little bit smaller seemed like it came so late, because nothing that you were doing as a means to attempt to replace some fraction of what Race Thompson was giving you was working for a significant period of time before the switch that was flipped was, all right, let's put Cap at the four, especially when that had worked well. And I forget whether it was a Kennesaw State game. I think it was
previous game. Yeah.
When that was a thing, obviously different opponent, all of those things, but that was a lineup with him in that spot that had played well. So yeah, just really underscores the importance of Race ultimately, which probably doesn't need to be underscored any more than it already was. No. But
even the Race we've seen earlier this year, who wasn't at the level of most of last year, was incredibly valuable to this team. He just wasn't hitting the highs we saw previously, but he was still incredibly valuable.
Yeah. All right, guys, let's go inside the numbers. You know, I mean, there's a lot of numbers here. You know, I mean, look, at the end of the day, Big Ten games are often decided by the team that gets to the free throw line more and makes them. You know, give Iowa credit. They got to the line 25 times and made 22 of them. Indiana got there 25 times, made 17, you know, and that's a big deal, you know. And Trace actually, you know, paced Indiana going 8-for-10, which is a good performance from him. Jalen 4-for-6, you know, Jordan Geronimo 0-for-3, Trey Galloway 2-for-4. You'd like to have some of those back. You know, another big key for Indiana has been rebounding.
One of those misses from Trey is worth mentioning. The last one.
Yeah, I mean, look, Trey, you got to hit the rim. You have. His reaction was weird.
Yeah.
Well, it's like he did it and like immediately realized. I took it as, oh crap, I'm supposed to hit the rim. It was either that or he just made like a physical mistake trying to do it. But I mean, that's, you know, you got
to get above the square. Like, what are you doing, buddy?
Yeah.
It's like, you don't know if he was trying to like just took the wrong angle and was trying to just smoke it off the front of the rim, which is pretty difficult to do.
Very difficult to do. The best way to do is you throw it low on the square. Like you throw it hard. You can chuck it. You don't have to shoot it, you know,
like Luka
low
did
on the square. Yeah. Just
do it like Luka, man.
Yeah.
Well, particularly in that case, I mean, obviously a really hard play to execute. No matter what. But without Rebraca out there, and I guess TJD's jumping ability was compromised by the back injury at that point, but you got Geronimo out there to maybe do it. Like, you just got to, I mean, give somebody a chance in that scenario. But yeah, that was not how you draw it up.
Yeah. You know, giving up 13 offensive rebounds to Iowa, that's not great. I actually thought at times the rebounding was better. You know, I saw more blockouts tonight, you know, and more attempts to do right on the glass. But, you know, the results really didn't end up being a ton better as Iowa out-rebounds Indiana. And then, you know, the big stat is 14 turnovers, you know, which certainly isn't as bad as last year, where I think Indiana had 20-plus turnovers against Iowa and just gave themselves no shot. But you know, you'd like to have a few of those back. Obviously Malik Renews, you know, really stick out. It's really the one blemish on Trace's stat line, you know, is the four turnovers that he had. You know, from a guard perspective, you really didn't get as many, you know, as you might've thought, but you know, those little things add up. You know, you give up a few too many rebounds, a few too many turnovers, miss a few too many free throws. That's how you give up a 21-point lead and end up losing by two. You know, just those little things all just ended up adding up to a deficit for Indiana in the end. Andy, what numbers jumped out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned
this. Besides Race Thompson's plus 16, which every time I look at it, it makes me want to freaking cry for just like a ton of reasons.
Yeah, I mean, I said this in the opening. I mean, 1.42 points per possession for Iowa in the second half. You're just not going to beat anybody, no matter how big of a lead you get, when you're unable to get stops as frequently as IU was. And that was, you know, the second chance points were a big part of that to me, even in the first half when there were opportunities to kind of stem the tide as Iowa was starting to come back. It just seemed like Iowa was able to get, you know, get a timely basket here and there. I think they had six over the latter part of the first half to really fuel some of those runs. And then I think they had six more in the first part of the second half where, you know, again, I was really struggling defensively, but you give yourself a chance on the first missed shot, you let those back in. It actually, I was surprised to see that it was only 14, quite honestly. And you know, for all that the work that IU wants to do in the paint, they score 48 points in the paint. You give up 46 to Iowa. I mean, they were a lot of straight line drive, easy baskets, guys just getting sealed. You know, the one that Geronimo, you know, ends up getting called for. I mean, he just got sealed like almost behind the backboard. As Iowa really pounded it in there, and it was different guys that were getting there. McCaffrey would be able to, you know, kind of get his way into the lane. Murray, obviously, Rebraca. I just thought IU really got abused on easy shots. And if you really look at, you know, shot charts in terms of where Iowa scored their points, there was not a whole lot that wasn't a three, that wasn't right by the rim, or that wasn't a free throw. If you look at it that way, I do not recall very many jump shots whatsoever for them. That
Sanford took a few, I think, but that's about it.
But other than that, there were not many, and I think he hit, you know, one, maybe two in the first half. But just giving up that many points right around the rim that were, you know, pretty easy buckets is definitely going to get you.
Yeah, I got a number, Jared. It's one technical foul on Fran McCaffrey that should have been two, and his ass should have been in the locker room for the end of the game. You cross the floor to go talk to the opponent. I don't care what's going on. Unless you're going to pull players apart because there's a fight or something, you are not allowed to do that. And he crossed half court, and Mike Woodson, I'm proud of him afterwards for saying that was BS. He should have been ejected, because Fran McCaffrey should have been ejected.
Didn't they actually signal the technical?
They did.
Oh, they 100% did. I retweeted a video that somebody had put out there.
Even if it's a double technical on the two coaches, even if it's a double technical, he's still out. And the officials called he blew the whistle and called the technical, and then we just never heard about it again. And you can't rescind it like that. You called the technical. You can rescind it if you called it on the wrong person. Like if there's a player and you call it on the wrong number and it's like, no, it wasn't number three, it was number five. I missed that. You can't call a technical to a coach's face and then be like, nah, never mind. That doesn't exist. That's not a rule. That's not something that happens. And he should have been ejected from the game. He should have not been on the floor for the last, whatever it was, like 3 minutes of the game or 4 minutes of the game. He should have been gone. And the fact that Big Ten officiating is still this much of a freaking disaster is absolutely absurd that they would do that. And then
once I saw who the names of the officials were for the game tonight, knew that, and ultimately, you know, that's where McCaffrey comes out, gets a technical in the first half. And then I feel like I'm not sure what he would have had to do to get thrown out of the game at that point, but I mean,
probably murder someone at center court. That might've done it.
That's possible.
I mean, it's questionable.
I
really
thought
would have been a judgment call.
The tone. I mean, for his, you know, IU, I think it was 10, 11 fouls to five at one point in the second half.
Yep.
It wasn't like Iowa was playing, you know, unaggressively on the defensive end. And then you got the Geronimo play, which I thought delay a game was a warning at first, that it wasn't a technical, unless somebody had already gotten a warning.
But here's the thing. I will say this.
Watch any college basketball game. Guys throw the ball to the ref all the time. I don't know if he put too much air under it, supposedly, but yeah,
you are allowed, by the way, you are allowed at every level of basketball to throw the ball to the referee if it lands in your hands. And Jordan had it in his hands, and you were told not to drop it and not to like toss away, and you're definitely not allowed to pass it to a player on the other team because they're worried about guys like firing it or something like that. So you were supposed to, in that situation, if you have your hands on the ball, you are supposed to pass it to the official or hand it to him or do something of that nature. Geronimo did nothing wrong, and he got called for a technical foul. And Mike Woodson knows that and was furious about it. And George Geronimo, you can see him say, I passed him the ball. What do you want? He didn't chuck it into the third row. He passed it right to the official, who was not, by the way, in the right position. He's supposed to be closer to the center of the court, but whatever, that's a sidebar. But he tossed it over to him, and he tossed it softly to him. It wasn't delay of game. He was doing exactly what you're taught to do growing up. If the ball is in your hands, you do not hand it to the official. You don't drop it. You don't kick it. The delay of game is where you knock it away from the opposing player so you can go set up your defense. That's delay of game. Giving it to the official is the opposite of delay of game. You're helping the other team get the ball in so that guy doesn't have to walk up and get it or whatever. It was a ridiculous call. Again, Big Ten officiating just covering itself in glory yet again tonight. But
they also missed the basket interference on Jordan because that should have been
basket interference. And I said that straight up. I'm sorry. You touched the rim.
It should have been.
It absolutely should have been basket.
It's if you hit the rim, I think. If you hit the net, if the rim or basket doesn't move, then it's not basket interference. But if you touch the rim at all, it's supposed to be.
Like the play's net.
That's usually the best thing that you can say about Big Ten officiating is that the bad calls kind of cancel each other out. Of course, in this case, Iowa not having their coach for the last 4 or 5 minutes, that probably would have been advantage Indiana. Anyway, whatever, man. Somebody
said they thought that the touching the rim and letting that go was a makeup for the terrible technical. And you know what? If you're giving a makeup that far down the road, clearly. That's the basket interference one. Like that's at every level of basketball. You know that if the ball is still on the rim and you touch the rim, it plays dead. It's over, and it's not basket. Either way, if the defense touches it too, it's a basket interference. So, I don't know.
Last number that I want to discuss real quick, and it'll give us a chance to discuss this player, is 4, which is 4 assists from Tamar Bates tonight, which was nice to see. One of them was just a beautiful outlet pass. Really active hands on defense, got a deflection. Cop got the steal. He got it to Tamar, who threw it up ahead, I think to Trey, maybe. But anyway, it was a great assist. Tamar finishes with 9 points. 8 points, 2-4 from 3-point range, 4 assists. And I think my thoughts on Tamar coming out of this game is we need him to be a little more aggressive offensively, I think. I thought there were some shots maybe he could have taken. He's not doing, kind of taking too many of the mid-range shots and out of control offensively. I think now as he kind of emerges into this role as, a starter and, potentially, a second, third scoring option, I think he's got to, pick his spots even a little bit better. So I don't necessarily think it's a criticism. I thought overall, he did some good things, struggled on defense like a lot of guys did. But I would like to see him, pick his spots a little bit more, be a little bit more aggressive offensively, especially when the team's struggling a little bit. What'd you guys think of his play tonight? Either one of you, feel free to chime in.
Both of us were muted, and we were just in a game of chicken to see who was going to come back on first. I think Tamar has over the last few weeks has been playing really. I thought he actually played pretty well defensively tonight. I thought at one point maybe just throw him at Chris Murray, when things are going bad, just to keep throwing different guys at him with different sizes, different lengths, whatever, just to keep trying to confuse him. But I thought he played a really good game. I think he's played really well the last couple weeks. I think his shot has really come along. He's 3 of 9, but I thought that there were a couple times he took shots when nobody else was doing anything. And so it was kind of, hey, I've been hitting. I'm going to rise up and hit this. I'd like to see him getting the free throw line a little bit more with some aggressive drives. I know he loves to pull up in the middle of the floor and take that mid range, and he hits it. But I'd like to see him. I think he's an exceptional finisher at the rim, and I would really like to see him being more aggressive and getting there. But really can't complain about what he did tonight. He's +5 in 33 minutes. And he's one of the few guys who wound up on the plus side for Indiana. Sadly, as I'm looking at this, Race Thompson was +16 in the 10 minutes he played. And, it just drives the knife a little deeper. But, Tamar to be out there for 33 minutes, the way he is and not being a primary ball handler, only have one turnover, but have the ball in his hands that much. Really great night for him. And again, he's a guy with Xavier Johnson out who's going to need to continue to step up as sort of a running buddy for Jalen Huccifino. And you like to see him do what he did tonight. I had no problem with any aspect of his game. You'd like to have a couple of those shots back, to go in, but I didn't have a problem with really anything he did.
Yeah, I think, Andy, the biggest point Ryan makes there, is that, zero free throw attempts. And unfortunately, you typically see a guy's free throw rate, typically you see it as a freshman, and it doesn't change a ton as guys get older. And that's maybe my one concern about Tamar as a player is his free throw rate, has been under 20%, which isn't great. For example, you remember Al Durham was a guy whose free throw rate was 40, 50%. I mean, he was getting to the line a lot more. And that to me, Andy, is really a next step for Tamar as an offensive player, to take a night like tonight where he scores 8 points and make it a 12 or 13 point night is get to the free throw line a little bit more. And right now he is pulling up a little bit more, there's not a lot of cuts available in the offense. Unfortunately, he was able to do that once and got a layup tonight. But that's really kind of one of the next steps for him to become a more efficient offensive player. We just haven't seen it yet in his time at IU.
Yeah, I think so. It goes back a little bit to how clogged a lot of the driving lanes really tend to be for this team in terms of trying to get guys going downhill to the basket. But I do think that's where, as he gets more comfortable attacking closeouts and going all the way to the basket instead of you know, shot fake, one dribble pull up from there, then maybe he's able to do some more things like that. Yeah, I thought overall he played pretty well. I think we all have the same, you know, kind of corner three where he's usually pretty effective that he passed up at some point in the second half. But I did think he was active, made a couple of nice plays defensively. Still is going to struggle there a little bit. But there was a play that I had marked down at the beginning of the game. He grabs a rebound, drove the ball all the way down the floor, kicked it back out to Jalen for a three.
Great play.
Was a really good play when things were really rolling for IU. And I think that's, you know, particularly with X out and with Tamar in the starting lineup, he does have to be not the primary playmaker, but somebody who can make those kinds of drives and create for others. He just didn't do a ton of that over the course of the game. And whether that's driving to, you know, evolving to drive to create, you know, scoring opportunities for himself or free throw opportunities, I think is another place he can get. I think, like I said, some of that I think is a little bit, there's not a lot of space to drive the lane with this group, but I thought a good, certainly not a step back from the things that he had done to earn him the spot in the starting lineup. And I really thought he complemented things well at that part. And I thought that was a little bit better flow, even as you went to the bench guys and rotation got all thrown off ultimately with Race going out, but did think it worked a little bit better bringing Trey off the bench and having Tamar start. So it seems like that's something that we'll probably see going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear 14 games in here with X out, with Race out, that, you know, the math for winning, the formula for winning for Indiana this season is going to be different than we thought. We thought this might be a top 10 defense. That's not happening. It wasn't happening even with X and Race healthy. It sure as heck isn't happening with those two guys out. And so the formula is going to have to include more scoring. And that means, you know, a guy like Tamar is going to have to score 13, 14, 15 points a game. You know, again, he scores 9, Indiana loses by 2. You know, and I don't mean that as a criticism to him. I want to see him be more aggressive, you know, pick his spots even more. So, you know, we're going to see how this evolves. I mean, things are going to be a lot different, obviously, than we thought they were by necessity because the personnel is different. And he continues to be a bright spot. And also, you know, a guy who's going to need to continue to evolve for this Indiana team to be able to win games. All right, coming up on the Assembly Call, we're going to hand out our game balls and Hoosier Hustle Award, discuss a few lingering questions, and then look ahead to what Indiana has coming up on Sunday. Quick turnaround. That is all next here on the Assembly Call. Stick with us.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The NBA Finals are heating up. Looking for hot takes on all the postseason action? The Old Man and the Three, presented by BMW, is the podcast to listen to for the ultimate finals coverage. Host and former NBA sharpshooter JJ Redick not only has a plugged-in perspective on the action from his time in the league, but he's also announcing the games in real time for ESPN. JJ has the ultimate insider point of view, and he's taking you along for the ride as he breaks down the best defensive schemes, dunks, and drives from each game. And speaking of incredible drives, there's no better place to tune into your new favorite podcast, The Old Man and the Three, than in a standard-setting BMW. Luxury meets power to create a wholly new driving experience. Push the limits this NBA season with the brand that set the ultimate standard, BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
What's up, y'all? It's Devontae Green giving you the green light to watch Assembly Call after every IU game. Just don't listen to their opinions about shot selection. Remember, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Go Hoosiers.
Thank you, Devontae. You are listening to the Assembly Call IU postgame show. Catch us live immediately following every IU basketball game, no matter how late it ends, plus every Thursday night at our website, assemblycall.com. By the way, I should mention, do you guys realize this is episode number 900? 900 episodes of the Assembly Call. Started way back in 2011. Here we are in 2023, up at 12:30 Eastern time, talking about yet another crushing Indiana loss. 900 episodes.
I feel old.
A few of them have been more upbeat than this one, although
slightly.
Yeah.
Wow, 900 episodes.
900 episodes.
How's the program doing in that time?
Well, yeah, it started out well.
Yeah, we really hit the high note with the first two seasons, and we did.
California
mudslide.
Yeah, so we've got almost 10,000 people on our email list. Join it for free. Join.assemblycall.com. That's join.assemblycall.com. I'm Jared. He's Ryan. He's Andy. We're breaking down Indiana's loss to Iowa. And so it is now time for our game balls presented by our friends at Bloom Environmental, where our friends Allie and James, also Assembly Call community members, their crew helps folks in southern and south central Indiana maintain healthy air quality in their home or business. You can learn more at bloomenviro.com. And when you mention this ad, you will get 23% off all of their testing services. That 23, of course, a nod to Trace Jackson Davis, who I have to assume is going to sweep the game ball. Although Jalen Hood-Schifino did put up, obviously a pretty good or state make a pretty good case for himself. But Andy, we'll go with you first. Who gets your game ball after this Indiana loss?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately it was pretty close for me. I the way that Hood-Schifino controlled the action in stretches, I think makes a somewhat compelling case for him, but I'll give it to Trace. I mean, he's clearly playing hobbled, played all 20 minutes of the second half. I think Woodson, he said in the press conference that he didn't want to come out really gutted it out in the second half, you know, played all 20 minutes, scored 16 points in the second half and grabbed 4 of his 9 rebounds then. So I'll go with Trace. Certainly wouldn't have an issue if anybody wanted to go with Malik, not by a long shot.
But Malik?
Jalen. Sorry. I was
going to say.
I saw some other comments. I would definitely have a problem with that, to be clear.
Yes, it was either a misspeak or the most deadpan joke of all time, which really would have been hilarious. But that's why it kind of caught me off guard for a second.
I call a bottom special. Yeah.
That was not my intention. I think his name was next to Trace's on the box score I was looking at, and that might have done
you
me.
You made Jared cough. He's been holding off.
Ryan, you go, because I'm about to die over here.
It was all a good run.
Mute yourself then. No, it's Trace Jackson Davis. I think, you know, the added thing of gutting it out through that back injury, played really well on both ends, 30 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 blocks too. I mean, in the second half, there was one point where he had a ball wide open underneath, could barely get over the rim with a dunk. I mean, like, I don't know if you guys saw that, but I was like, oh man. I mean, he can easily, you know, half-heartedly get well over the rim for a dunk, and he forced himself up just barely. And you saw him just holding his back the entire game. I mean, that kid, you know, he's exactly what you want a college basketball player, and we're very lucky to have him. And 30 points, 9 rebounds, 8 of 10 from the free throw line. Bummer he missed the one that would have tied the game, but I don't think that changes anything. I think Indiana would have lost it anyway. You know, just a kid who gutted it out tonight and deserves recognition for it.
He does. You know, I almost wonder, I mean, you know, look, he plays 38 minutes, you know, with that injury, you know, and part of it is just you didn't have anybody to put in for him that you felt comfortable with. I also wonder if part of that is just we don't want him to get stiff sitting on the bench. He's better off, even if he's tired, just being out there. You know, what is resting really going to do, you know, when it's a back injury like that? So now he, you know, to me, you know, part of what this performance does is it does help color in a little bit what we saw in December, you know, which is, you know, we kind of thought he was hurt, you know, because you saw him holding his back some, you know, but obviously he struggled in some games. But for him to come off, you know, a 2-week break and still be dealing with it like this, I mean, this is, you know, obviously something serious that he's dealing with, and, you know, and to be able to go out and give the team the effort and the production. Yeah, that's the thing that really impressed me tonight with him, because there have been games in the past in his career, you know, when things aren't going well, if he's not feeling right physically, you know, he's not able to produce as well as you would hope, even if he's out there. But tonight he was out there for his team. He was leading from the front and able to produce, just able to find ways, you know, that veteran savvy. I thought there was such a juxtaposition to me You see Malik get in there, get the ball, and he wants to go 100 miles an hour the second he gets it. You know, and the difference between a freshman and a senior is Trace would get the ball and just very patiently wait, see where the spot is, and then attack it, you know. And he was able to get, you know, several points, or, you know, several buckets like that. Ultimately, it wasn't enough. But I think you have to be just incredibly impressed with what Trace did tonight. So my game ball goes to him as well. And that is his seventh game ball of the season. He leads Tamar and Race Thompson tied with two. Malik Renew, Xavier Johnson, Miller Kopp all have one. And it is time now for the Hoosier Hustle Award. The Hoosier Real Hustle Award.
Hi, this is Anthony Leal, reminding you to check out our friends at Evansville Security Services. Based in the hometown of IU legend Calvert Cheney, Evansville Security Services has been providing off-duty police officers to businesses and individuals since 2001. In other words, they're in the business of prevention and peace of mind. And remember, prevention cannot be measured. To learn more about how Evansville Security Services can help you preserve your peace of mind by preventing bad outcomes, visit EvansvilleSecurityServices.com. That's EvansvilleSecurityServices.com.
Thank you, Anthony. All right, Hoosier Hustle Award, gentlemen. Ryan, why don't you go first for this one?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple ways you could go with this one. I think Huchifino is the obvious choice because of how he played, but this is supposed to be purely a hustle award, not really a who was the second best player in the game award. I'm going to give it to Miller Kopp because I thought he made a lot of scrappy plays tonight, and I thought that he played his butt off for every minute he was out there, and I thought he was willing to facilitate for other people. He grabbed 9 rebounds too, which is not his thing. He was helping out, you know, and he played 31 minutes, was a +2. And, you know, to say that Miller Kopp had a great game and he didn't hit a 3-pointer, I mean, you would not think you would do that. But I thought Miller Kopp was a big part of Indiana staying in this game and keeping them in this game. So I really liked the way he played tonight, the hustle. You know, the guy I would give it to, which is Race Thompson. I thought that he was amazing when he was on the floor tonight. I'm giving it to Race. I'm going to give it to Race because that 10 minutes was set the tone for everything Indiana did to get the lead. And if they don't get the lead early, this is a blowout. I'm going to go with Race Thompson because I thought that he showed the kind of heart and determination and effort that we have seen from Race Thompson for years. And I texted you guys before he got hurt. I texted you. I was like, hey, Race is back. This is the old Race. And I'm going to make call an audible and give it to Race.
Yeah, I agree. I think you could give it to Jalen. I think you could give it to Miller Kopp. And there's a part of me that is extremely sad about what I'm about to say, but this may be the last opportunity we have to give it to Race.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I don't want to speculate.
And we basically created the award for him, by the way.
Yes, we did. But when you saw the injury and you saw his reaction to it, I think we all, I'm expecting the worst with it and hoping for the best and just want nothing more than for that kid to be able to get back out on the basketball court. I'm going with you. I mean, for the 10 minutes that he was out there and just for everything he's given to this program, you know, if this is the last time that we can give him a hustle award, he's getting it. He's earned it. So Race for me, Andy, who gets yours?
I was thinking about Kopp as well. Certainly no issue giving it to Race based on what you guys said. So I think we've hit the guys that I would have considered. As Ryan said, you know, I think we put this in place not just to say, hey, here was another guy who, you know, played the best. And we talked a lot about Huchifino already anyway. So, yeah, I thought Kopp and Race were the two guys to really consider for it. So
let's talk lingering questions. I mean, look, I think there's a whole list of lingering questions with this team right now.
And yeah, how long you got?
Gonna go. Yeah, I mean, and look, it's late, so I don't want to belabor this. But I think the two biggest lingering questions to me are related. You know, one is, look, Trace gutted this out, gave us 30 points and 9 boards tonight. What's he going to have to give on Sunday? You know, Indiana has to fly.
You can't lose that. Game.
Well, I mean, set that aside for a moment. But, you know, what is Trace going to be able to give you? You know, we don't know right now. You know, he's been able to play and kind of gut through some of this stuff. So I guess we kind of expect that he'll still be able to. You know, it was said that those two games he missed, Elon and Kennesaw State, if they had been big games, Big Ten games, he would have played. So we'll see. You know, hopefully that is the case. But now with Race Thompson out, presumably for the foreseeable future, you know, you've got to be able to have someone else who can come in and spell Trace and give you some minutes. And right now, Malik Renew looks totally lost. And clearly, Mike Woodson doesn't have confidence in Logan Duncan, you know, to put him in. And so that, to me, is a big lingering question. What is Trace's health going to be moving forward? And is Mike Woodson and this staff and maybe his former high school teammate, Jalen Hood-Schifino, are they able to get Malik Renew going again? Because this should have been a good spot for him. You know, Iowa gives up a high percentage on twos. You know, Rabraka is 6'9", doesn't have long arms, which has bothered Malik. This profile, does now was on the road, but this profile, this kind of matchup, he should have at least had some success in. And he was not just a non-factor in his 6 minutes, he was a decided negative for Indiana.
Yeah.
And that's a problem, you know, because this guy has talent. And so, but now we've seen it enough over the last month. I know, you know, and he cleaned up against, you know, some teams that weren't as athletic and not as good, but he's got the ability. It's in there, but we're just not seeing it. And I think it's, you know, with the depth issues that Indiana now has, you know, for a while there, Malik Renew's development was kind of a, it was a bonus if it happened, like this would be great. Now it kind of has to happen. And it looked about as far away as it has tonight. That's a big concern as we, you know, go through the rest of this month, especially with a lot of winnable games. But if, you know, if Trace is at 75%, you need someone who can step in. And right now, you know, Malik's not ready, but he's going to have to be. So, Andy, take that anywhere you want. But to me, those are the two biggest lingering questions I have coming out of this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are the ones that I would have as well. I mean, you really look at trying to figure out in a game that tonight, you know, only really played, I guess you played eight guys, but Renew played hardly at all. You had Race go down and really in the second half played, you know, played six essentially. So if Race is going to be out for some period of time based on the way that he looked, whether it's the rest of the season or not, that's unclear. You know, Trace, I don't think he's going to be able to hold up under that kind of workload for a long period of time. So you're going to have to try to figure something out, whether that means giving Duncan a few extra minutes and at least giving him a shot, see what he does. If it's 3 minutes and you got to put Trace right back in, then so be it. But I think you got to give some of these other guys opportunities. I think, you know, we always go back to we're not in practice. They know who's best suited to be able, you know, ready to contribute and play in the game. But you're not going to survive, again, a team that already struggles defensively, you know, with guys who are playing, you know, 35, 38 minutes every game as we head into the next stretch for, you know, for the foreseeable future without X and Race. So, you know, I thought CJ Gunn showed some things. Maybe this game was not for him. I did see somebody in the chat say this might have been actually athletically a decent game to put Duncan in, that he might have been well suited for what some of Iowa was doing, maybe more so than he might be in some other games over the course of the season. We'll never know because he didn't play, but it's an interesting argument to be made, you know, about that. So I think we've got to figure out who at least a couple guys are. It doesn't mean that you got to play everybody that comes in the game. They don't all have to play 8, 10, 12 minutes. Can you get you get 5 good minutes from a few guys here and there? Because, you know, you're not going to be able to go very long without Jalen on the floor. I thought that was, you know, tonight took him out, had to probably give him some rest in the first half, but I just found myself looking at the time and saying, you got to get him back in the game. It's starting to slip away.
When he got his fourth foul, they weren't even thinking about taking him out of the game. And there was like 5 minutes left and they could have stolen a couple minutes, but they couldn't do it.
Yeah. Just wasn't possible. So it doesn't matter to me who those guys are. And if those guys aren't the same guys as Northwestern as they would be the game after that, it doesn't matter. But you're not going to survive playing the guys that, you know, consistently playing guys the amount of minutes that they ended up playing tonight, which was exaggerated tonight against an Iowa team that really likes to get up and down and do some of those things. That's not the same with Northwestern. Maybe that helps you. But who can step forward and both get an opportunity and contribute off the bench are the big questions for me.
Yeah, I think mine kind of echoes this, and it's that, you know, it's not really a question, but it's related to this. It's if there is a game where Malik Renew is going to get right, it's going to be at home against Northwestern, a team that is not going to be as athletically gifted as other teams in the Big Ten. And it's just, he needs to see the ball go through the hoop and just get his confidence back. It's not a talent issue. It's never been a talent issue. It's not a size issue with him. It's none of that. He just has to get that confidence back. He got manhandled a bit against North Carolina, and since then, he's faced some good big men and has not played well. I think Rutgers was terrible for his confidence because he just got out-athleted in that game and you know, got shoved around and wasn't strong enough. Northwestern is a game where he can get right. Here's the other thing I will say. We said a couple weeks ago when Logan Duncan played in the game and looked pretty darn good, he earned some minutes. And Mike Woodson needs to give him a chance now with Race Thompson out. You have to give that guy a chance. He's got some length, even if it's to steal 5 minutes, like Andy said. He's got some length. He's got some touch around the hoop. He's got size. He runs the floor, and he hustles. Give him a chance. I don't care if he's not the most athletically gifted guy on the floor. I don't care if he looks like the guys you normally want to have out there. Give him something. Another guy who could have helped you a little bit tonight just for a couple minutes because of his athletic ability, throw Caleb Banks out there for a couple minutes. I mean, I know, again, on the road against Iowa, whatever, but if you need minutes to find him somewhere, that kid's 6'8". He can jump. He's athletic. Get him out there. If you're putting Jordan Geronimo out for that long, put him out there for a little bit. Run him to that high post a little bit. He's tall. He can see over. He's bigger than Geronimo. He's tall. He can see it. Like, these guys know how to play basketball. Give him a chance. Like, I get why CJ Gunn isn't playing, because you've got Huchipino. You've got Tamar. You've got Kopp. You've got the perimeter guys kind of doing. I think you should get some minutes. But I get why that's not as urgent. Now, with how thin you are on the interior, and you're always thin on the interior with this team, you're missing Race. You need to give some of these guys who can play in that sandbox a little more time. You really need to. And I don't care if it's 3 minutes. I don't care if it's 5 minutes. Put Logan Duncan out there a little bit. Give Trace a rest. They have similar games, you know, as far as the, you know, just being a back-to-the-basket guy. They can replace. And then, of course, you need to give Malik Renew time. And you need to give him a chance. You tweeted that tonight, Jared. You were like, well, you know, you got to give this guy time. And I'm like, yeah, I just don't think this is the environment. On the road against an Iowa team that plays fast is probably rough for a freshman with no confidence.
No, look, he gave him two opportunities in the first half and second half, and he wasn't ready. I mean, you can't give him just more than that.
He just looks lost, and I think that on the road in that environment would have been really tough for him to turn around. At home against Northwestern, that's his opportunity to turn it around. And you start with baby steps, and then maybe you play okay on the road the next time or whatever. But this is the chance right now. And it's coming at a great time for him at home, Northwestern. He's going to be more talented than anybody he's going to face on that floor. He needs to take advantage of that. And they need to pump him up like he's going to take advantage of that.
Man, well, there's lots of other lingering questions that we could get to. Honestly, this feels like a game that we need like a week to decompress from. And there's so many angles coming out of it. We do not have that kind of time. Andy, why don't you give us the Cliff Notes version of your typical preview here, as it's almost 1 o'clock Eastern where you are. But Indiana plays Northwestern Sunday. We will have a post-game show immediately following. Then the women play Northwestern later on Sunday, and the Doing the Work crew, Jeff and Kathy, will have a show after that. So lots of IU Northwestern talk on Sunday for you here on the Assembly Call and Doing the Work. Andy, Northwestern just came off a massive win over Illinois that featured a ranting. I'm not sure who's more unhinged right now, Fran McCaffrey or Brad Underwood, but they're each giving each other quite a run for their money. But Northwestern playing the best defense of any Chris Collins team so far. So they've got something to hang their hat on.
Yeah, they've been a little bit tough to figure out when you look at, you know, kind of down their schedule so far. You know, lost a thriller 43-42 to Auburn. Yes, that was a full game score. Then got blown out by Pitt. I think that was before anybody thought Pitt was actually good, but bounced back to win at the Breslin Center. Got beat pretty handily by Ohio State at home, and then bounced back to beat Illinois by double digits. So a little bit of a tough team to figure, to your point. You know, they're currently sixth in defensive efficiency on KenPom, which is pretty staggering. They're number one 2-point defense in the country. So, you know, go figure on that one, I guess. And just try to figure out, you know, I got a few guys who rank pretty high in block rate, protecting the rim. But, you know, certainly a team that has struggled on offense, ranking about in the middle of the pack there. So definitely a difficult team to get a read on based on based on how they've done. They actually are one of the worst 2-point shooting teams, but have the best 2-point defense in the country. So,
by the way, just to warn everybody,
juxtaposition there.
Just to warn everybody, Chase Audige will hit a few shots that will drive you absolutely insane as a fan of the opposing team. So just be prepared for that, everybody.
We know how IU Northwestern games go, Ryan. We're well aware. It's Chase Audige.
He's already done that against IU. Yeah.
Yeah. No one, everybody knew Peyton Sanford was going to bust out of his shooting slump tonight. There was no question that was going to happen tonight.
Yeah, we did.
No question.
And he hit those clutch free throws at the end when he hasn't had a jumper all Big Ten season.
Gosh, what did Galen tweet late in the second half? Nice things. What are they? I don't know. And then Ken Bykoff is like just running down all the horrid injury luck that Indiana basketball has had, where good seasons have been derailed by just awful, awful injuries. I mean, whatever. I want to go to bed. You're listening. I probably should go to bed because now I'm just getting cranky. You're listening to the Assembly Call IU postgame show. Remember to check out our friends at Home Field Apparel, especially when they release their new IU stuff. Use the promo code HOME at checkout to get 15% off your first order. All right, gentlemen, last call. Andy, you go first.
I mean, it's one thing to lose Race Thompson. It's one thing to lose the game tonight brought us both, which is pretty much the summation of where things sit right now. And you know, for all the challenges that it feels like this team has faced already with, from an injury perspective, with losing X and trying to bounce back from that, I think it's just going to get harder and harder to bounce back from, you know, some of these disappointments, both on the court and from an injury perspective. So probably a good thing that the turnaround is a relatively quick one, I guess, with, you know, later Thursday game and playing again on Sunday. You know, just chance to get back on the right side of things in Big Ten play and see if they can get a little bit of positive momentum going the other way. But yeah, as we talked about in the lingering question, you want to have that, you know, quote unquote, next man up mentality. You got to figure out who the next guy up is actually going to be that's going to be able to step in and produce. So we saw great things from TJD and Jalen tonight. I think you saw some promising things from Tamar in a starting role. Cop did some good things, didn't shoot enough maybe as we would have liked, as we talked about earlier, but there's a huge void that people are going to need to step up to fill at this point. And I think you can kind of sit the preseason expectations to the side right now and just focus on figuring out the answers to that question and who's going to be the person from a leadership standpoint to really pull this team through. What can they do from a coaching perspective to make adjustments from game to game to let guys be successful? And then from there, who else can step up and really provide some positive contributions that were perhaps not needed and not expected early on, but have quickly become needed for this team to be able to move forward.
You know, one thing I've learned, Ryan, after 900 episodes of doing the show is that after bad losses, there comes a point in segment 3 when no one else really has anything left to say in the chat mob, and it's just 2 or 3 people pining for Kelvin Sampson and wishing that he was still the coach. And we've reached that point now in the chat mob.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Here at 12:54 Eastern time.
We should just do a whole show devoted. Sometime, Jared, you and I should do a special episode devoted to that that might shut those people up. But
no, I'm pretty sure it won't. But
because I was in Bloomington when that was happening and a reporter for a local newspaper. So there's a lot I know about that. Anyway, for on to this game. Look, I think first of all, the concern with Race Thompson, I have loved watching Race play Indiana basketball for the past 6 years. I mean, obviously first year he didn't play, but we saw him warm up at a game in person and we've all looked at each other and said, oh, that guy's going to be good. You know, Race is somebody we have lauded repeatedly. I was the president of the Race fan club for years before he was even playing at IU. I've loved that guy's game. I've loved his heart. I think he's the exact kind of thing you want out of a player at Indiana. Just hustle, you know, heart, energy, just being that kind of quiet leader and being somebody you could always rely on for his entire career to at least provide energy, despite injuries, despite every single time that he could have been beaten down and quit, Race Thompson kept coming back. And so hopefully this is another example of that and he can be back. It's really sad for me because I have loved watching that kid grow as a person and a player. and really, you know, care about that guy's development because he's been so fun to watch over the years, and loved him in high school when he was a high school recruit, and still to this day, think he's a great kid, better, a great player, and a better person. So let's hope he gets healthy. As for the rest of the of what we saw tonight, Indiana's players fought. They really did. They played as hard as they could. As I said earlier, I don't think they were put into positions to succeed repeatedly. And I think things kind of came together a little bit there late. But this is a bad loss, and I don't blame the players. And I think that the staff needs to get better at recognizing the players they have and the positions they're putting them in and improve in that way. And I also think you need to start using more of your players if you are thin like this. And you gave these kids scholarships, you should start trusting them. And if you're going to trust Malik to be out there in a game like this, I don't understand why you wouldn't trust some of the other young guys out there. I know you've got to go to Malik now. And Malik's been struggling. I think he's got all the ability in the world to be a stud at Indiana and an all Big Ten guy. He's just in a tough spot right now. But I think you got to give Logan Duncan a shot. I think you got to give Caleb Banks a shot. You got to use it because the season's not going great right now, guys. You got to find a spark somewhere. And it can't just be your best two players. Find that spark by giving guys a chance to shine. And so against Northwestern, I really hope we see an expanded lineup. And then from that, you can start culling it down once you've given a guys a shot.
Yeah, as we end this show and, you know, the emotion of the game itself, you know, kind of washes over, I can't think about anything else but race, man. I hope somehow, some way, that injury is not as bad as it looked and he's able to come back. Seeing the pain on his face, I can't get that image out of my head. And I feel so bad for that guy and how much he's given. You know, same thing when X went down, you know, and you see how much those guys care. And I'm with you, Ryan. You know, I thought the players played hard. The players tried to do the right things tonight. You know, it wasn't there. And the last thing I'll say is, you know, I give Iowa's crowd credit. You know, their team was reeling. They lost three games in a row. It would have been a real easy game for a crowd to turn on a team, right? They come out and they're just getting blasted early on. And that crowd stuck with Iowa. And I thought really helped them, you know, toward the end of the game as Indiana's kind of running out of gas a little bit, just helped give Iowa that final push. You know, and look, I hope that's the crowd that we have at Assembly Hall. I fully expect that it will be. Because this feels right now like a program that needs a little push, you know. Two of your five starters are gone. Your All-American is hobbled with a back. You know, guys are in new roles. There's probably some self-doubt creeping in after you blow this kind of lead. You know, what we need on Sunday is that full program win where it's like everybody just does a little bit more. The crowd is there and you go win. And so, you know, I think that's what we need. It's a long season left. This team can still do a lot of things, but everybody's got to pull together. And unfortunately, it didn't happen tonight. But I hope Race ends up being okay either way. Just appreciate everything that he's given to the program, hoping for the best. And look forward to hopefully a better result on Sunday when Indiana takes on Northwestern. But thank you to everybody who's here with us in the chat mob, hanging out until 1 o'clock in the morning. We appreciate you guys a lot. We really do. We wouldn't be here at episode 900 still doing this if it weren't for you all. So thank you. And that'll do it. If you want to see us do the show live and be part of the live chat, make sure that you subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/assemblycall. And don't forget to go to join.assemblycall.com to join our free email newsletter. Special thank you to Bob Thompson for the music you hear on the show. Special thank you to John Ringer of rigdesign.com for designing our logo. And thank you, as I said, for listening. We'll be back to talk IU Northwestern on Sunday. Until then.
Take it from me, Anthony Leal. Keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim, and go Hoosiers.
All right, I got to get out of here, folks. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
Up yours.
Felt like the perfect ending. I need to go sleep. You're muted, Ryan, so whatever clever comeback you just said.
I said, yeah, that's how I feel about Fran McCaffrey.
That was fantastic. Well timed.
Jeez.
That one's going to be right up there with the Sterator. That it almost, you almost can't find the time when it won't be amusing. So.
Steratore is great. Like, I love that. And I really like Gene Steratore. So
Steratore is great.
He is. He is. I love that he did that, man.
I need a recovery beer.
Now it's time for a recovery beer. Or a good night beer. Or Andy, maybe a breakfast beer here. I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, hey, it's 10:01. It's time. It's late here too, guys. I don't know what you're
doing. Shut up. Just shut up.
Hey, by the way, we should talk about this. Do we have a place for the meetup yet? Or is that still up in the air?
No, Galen and I talked about it, and I posted in the community about it. So I guess, yeah, we can talk about it briefly here. We don't yet. The issue we're running into is we wanted to do another post-game show, and it's really hard to get space, especially the kind of space that we would need to do that in the evening. And the game starts at 4. And so weekend, evening, it's really tough to get that space. So we're probably just going to do the post-game show at the Cuban Center, or like, we'll do a quick post-game show at the Cuban Center or the media school, and then do a meetup. We're definitely going to do a meetup somewhere, which I'm just not sure if we're going to actually be able to do a show. So we're going to do a meetup. I've talked to some players about doing, potentially doing a guest appearance. That may depend on how the game goes, some other factors, but we are for sure going to get together on Friday night, get together on Saturday night.
Do we have a reservation anywhere? I mean, we could talk
we're
about
working.
That.
Yeah, no, we're working on that.
Okay, cool.
Gail and I just talked about it the other day.
Okay.
So
it just hit me that it's a month away. Like, that was the thing. Okay.
It hit us too. So
yeah, so all right. I'll talk to you off air. I might have some ideas.
Okay. Sweet. Andy, people are calling for the man bun.
I'm good without it.
I did make sure that I took that down so that it didn't present that illusion. So
all right, guys, get some sleep.
Yep. See y'all. Right. Thanks, everybody, for being here.
All right. See you guys.
Bye.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.